You're listening to the heartbeat of the University of Maryland, Baltimore, the UMB Pulse.
Thanks for streaming the UMB Pulse. I'm Charles Shalit.
I'm Dana Rampola.
And I'm Jenna Frick.
And later on, we will sit down with the new University of Maryland, Baltimore Police Chief, Thomas Leone. And we'll learn about him, some of the services the department offers, and how to keep safe this holiday season. He will also be joined by UMB PD Public Information Officer Karin Morrell. Check the episode description or chapter markers to skip ahead. Man, I feel like Halloween was yesterday, and now we're staring at Thanksgiving and all the turkeys. From pumpkins on porches to pumpkin pie, it's been a pivot.
It's been quite a pivot. And you know what? Actually, I have a hot take about Thanksgiving and fall flavors. So everyone's all about the pumpkin and the pumpkin spice, the pumpkin bread, the pumpkin pie. But honestly, I think the very underappreciated and kind of much better flavor for fall is apple.
Oh, that's a good point.
Apple pies, apple tarts, apple cider, all that.
Made apple sauce.
Exactly. It never gets any appreciation.
I agree, but I got to say, cranberry overload really is the kind of theme of the season. And I just can't get enough of cranberry everything.
Really?
At this point. Yeah. Like the cranberry logs. Like the anything cranberry at basically at Starbucks. And now I even notice like another coffee shop is putting out like cranberry zesty muffins. And
that's so interesting.
I can feast on that for days.
But see, I always feel like cranberry can happen any time of the year. Like I love a vodka cranberry in the summertime with like a hint of lime or whatever.
Yum.
Well, maybe we should have a couple of those to kick off our session today.
Oh, yeah. That and maybe some Thanksgiving food. Do you guys have any favorite foods that are on the table for Thanksgiving with you all?
Pumpkin roll is our choice of dessert. It's like a log with like cream cheese in it.
Oh, like
and a confectioner
the swirled
sugar.
One?
Yeah, yeah. It's really good.
Oh, cool. What about you, Dana?
My go-to is mashed potatoes and gravy.
Ooh.
Nice comfort food.
Classic.
Cold fall day after the Calvert Hall Loyola Turkey Bowl game.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's our annual tradition. My husband's going to be like, this is his 50th year, I think. And it's like my 40th.
Nice.
Wow. That's a cool tradition.
Yeah. Every morning, bright and early. His brothers played in it. My son played in it. And last year is the first time they canceled it because of COVID.
Oh, that's
sadly.
Right.
Wow. So is it going to be on for this year?
As far as we know, so far.
All right. That's great. My family is kind of weird with Thanksgiving. Like, my mom's whole side of the family is Italian, so they don't really understand how to do Thanksgiving. So, like, we'll have a turkey, but sometimes it's not really cooked correctly.
Oh.
Or we'll have, like, lasagna and spinach pie,
yeah,
which is, like, just so not what normal traditional Thanksgiving is. So I usually rely on, like, Friendsgiving to have, like, normal Thanksgiving food.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Let me ask you this. Does the lasagna have cinnamon in it?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, my husband's family is from Sicily, and their lasagna, also at Thanksgiving, they always have a tray with cinnamon, which I never heard of before. Oh, so
I've never heard of that, but my family's not from Sicily. We're from like the Naples area in central Italy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Sicily thing or an Italian. That's why I was asking if it's an Italian.
Yeah, everyone just does Thanksgiving their own way. I knew someone from high school, his family does ribs for Thanksgiving. Ooh.
I would be totally on board with that.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
I know. A little messy, but why not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, we know it's been a challenging year for a lot of people. There are some great ways to make Thanksgiving better for a lot of other people in the community, not just ourselves with our mashed potatoes. There's one in particular. UMB has organized a special day for 31 years. It's called Project Feast. And Project Feast will be held on Thanksgiving Day. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or been to it, but it's on the 25th. And it's from 11 to 3 at Booker T. Washington Elementary School in Southwest Baltimore. And the event features to-go meals, community resources, and donated clothing. I think they've got toiletries. They've all kinds of handouts, toys, and non-perishable food.
Yeah. And, you know, they're also in need of volunteers to bake the turkeys, serve meals, donations of gently used clothing, toys, as we mentioned, food, as well as direct donations to pay for the cost of a turkey meal or a coat. We will share a link in our episode description to an Elm story with all the details and links for ways to help. Email questions to projectfeastumb@gmail.com.
Yeah, it is a really great event. And there's always a great turnout. And I have to shout out one of our colleagues that used to work in OCPA, Patricia Fanning, who is there every single year serving, handing out food and clothing and donations and stuff. So
one more amazing thing about Patricia.
I know.
I know that.
She's wonderful and a legend here at UMB, I think.
She is. She really is.
So let's hear what else is happening at UMB. This is your pulse check. The UMB face covering policy has been updated where masks are no longer required outdoors. For more, visit umaryland.edu/coronavirus. COVID-19 vaccines are now available for 5 to 11-year-olds. The vaccine will be made available at schools, local health departments, pediatrician and family physician offices, as well as pharmacies. Find providers at covidvax.maryland.gov and find Baltimore City clinics at coronavirus.baltimorecity.gov. The UMB Community Engagement Center will host a free train and work resource fair on Tuesday, November 23rd from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Bring your resume and your career dreams, where you will be connected with numerous employers, training programs, and community resources. No registration is required. Also at the CEC, the Community Computer Lab is now open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. No appointment is needed. Children under 18 years old may use the lab while accompanied by an adult. The CEC is located in the Hollins Market neighborhood at 16 South Poppleton Street. Subscribe to their newsletter by visiting our chapter markers or visit umaryland.edu/pulse for a link.
Enjoy a classic holiday atmosphere with Donaldson Brown. The Donaldson Brown Riverfront Event Center in Port Deposit will host a holiday brunch on Saturday, December 4th. The brunch includes a scrumptious menu, including homemade goodies, self-guided tours, and a tasty holiday favor for all in this historic Maryland treasure. All of this is included for only $28 a person. Seatings are offered at 10 a.m. in the formal dining room and at noon in the Chesapeake room. Reservations are a must. Email donaldsonbrown@umaryland.edu or call 410-378-2555.
Learn about the history of inequitable housing and transportation in Baltimore and how the city can move forward in a new course offered to the general public. A Brief History of Oppression and Resistance, an Introduction, is offered by the University of Maryland School of Social Work to learn about some of the historical and contemporary forms of structural oppression and racism that targets Black individuals and communities in Baltimore City. That includes the topic of redlining and the Highway to Nowhere, to name a few. It is a two-hour self-paced online course. The School of Social Work's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion is also offering limited, full, and partial community scholarships for this course. The regular price is $80. Visit umaryland.edu/pulse for a link to the course. And that is your pulse check. University of Maryland Police Chief Thomas Leone was appointed to the top post at the UMB Police Department earlier this semester on September 21st. He is no stranger to UMB, having served the department since 2016 and was recently in the interim chief role. He also has 20 years of experience with the Frederick County Sheriff's Office. He holds a Master of Science degree in Homeland Security and Crisis Management Law from the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. And in 2021, he received honorable mention in the leadership category of the UMB Presidential Core Values Awards. He is joined here today with UMB PD Public Information Officer Karin Morrell. Welcome and congratulations to Chief Leone. And thank you, Karin, for joining us here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So you've been here quite a while, but you've most recently had the interim tag removed. How does it feel to be able to lead this department?
It's a privilege. It really is. From coming in as a lieutenant and working my way up through the ranks, it's just been a great experience meeting a lot of wonderful people here.
And give people a little bit of background about the size of the department, how many police and security officers there are, and the staff that just make up the department.
So we have 195 positions, 66 police officers, 102 security officers, and 8 security supervisors. 10 communications dispatchers.
As well as administrative staff.
Yeah, no, it is a handful of people that serve the community.
It's really amazing. How you spent 20 years with the Frederick County Sheriff's Office, and then you've been here since 2016. So how did you wind up here, and what do you like about being an officer in a university setting?
So the first 20 years I spent municipal policing. I was a director of a drug task force, and we traveled all around the country into a lot of big cities and met a lot of really interesting people along the way. Towards the end of my career there, I started to do some work at Mount St. Mary's. It's a small Catholic college in Northern Frederick County. And I just was intrigued with higher ed at that point. So after my 20 years in Frederick, I wanted to pursue a little different journey, and higher ed was it just seemed to be the right spot for me.
So, Chief, where did you grow up and why did you want to become a police officer?
Oh, I've told this story a few times. So I'm from a small coal mining town in Western Pennsylvania. My very first interaction with a police officer, they had a call for service in my neighborhood, and I was about 12. So my mom had passed away the year before, wow. Right? Like, so I was taking care of my little brother, and the police show up in our neighborhood. And, you know, it wasn't like we didn't see all the violence and all of that stuff on TV like we do today. It was much more censored back then. So when the police showed up, it was like a superhero came into the neighborhood, and I was like, wow. And, you know, the trooper, it was Pennsylvania State Trooper. He said, "Hey, can you take your brother and go in the house? We're investigating something in the neighborhood." And, you know, that whole experience, like this person coming into our small little town saying, "Hey, we're here to help you." And like that guided me along the journey.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't either. From 12 years old, you knew you wanted to be a police officer.
I did. And look, there were some bumps and some along the way of that journey. But yeah, since I was 12, I kind of knew I wanted to be in law enforcement. Yeah.
Which town in Pennsylvania?
So it's Luxor is the name of the town. Greensburg, New Stanton,
okay, yeah,
Western Pennsylvania, about 45 minutes from Pittsburgh.
Some other really interesting jobs. You painted buildings for a while.
Oh, I did. So whenever I get out of high school and when I'm trying to figure out life, I took a job as a union painter. And the day I knew I didn't want to do that anymore is they put me on the side of a 20-story building.
Oh,
and
man.
I was painting windows. And so on a little thing called a pick. So there was about a foot of metal that I was standing on with a little handrail and painting windows up all of those stories. And in the city, the wind would howl.
Oh, my God.
Pittsburgh is a square. This blocks are square. Mm-hmm. So the wind would just howl down the street. And it was terrifying.
And then you realized, all right, I can be on the ground. I don't need to be.
I'd rather be a policeman. It isn't as terrible. It isn't as
scary. My mouth dropped open when you were talking about being on a teeny tiny thing that high up. Oh my gosh.
I'm afraid of heights to this day from that experience. I don't want to climb anywhere.
Jeez,
not even, you don't even write like the Duquesne incline in Pittsburgh.
I can do the Duquesne incline.
Okay.
But, the rope swing or something mm-hmm. in an amusement park, not a chance.
Oh no.
Like, I don't want anything to do with the heights.
I don't blame you. But, so pivoting back to, working at UMB and a university. So the educational aspect, for officers is probably a huge attraction in your ranks. And they also go through some sort of specialized training. Is that right?
They do. So the Maryland Police Training Commission requires 18 hours of training. Our officers are all right around 60 or 60 plus hours of training. But our training focus is more on community outreach and support. We do the red folder training for mental health awareness, dealing with students or community members in mental health crises. Our LGBTQ plus police training is just really unique for policing in general. Over the 20 years of experience that I had prior to coming to UMP, we never really invested in learning about diversity, equity, and inclusion the way we are here at UMP.
And touching on something you said earlier about the red folder training in mental health, I think this really goes into our next topic about social workers and police officers. And that's been a huge part of the national conversation. And I think it's really cool about this new program with the School of Social Work Community Outreach Service. They're providing two interns to assist the department. Tell us about that partnership and what both students and officers get from the experience.
Oh, it's amazing. So the whole criminal justice system and policing in general, we're looking for a change. So the program to me is a beacon of hope. It's the light that says, you know what, we can do this and we can do it better. The co-response model is being talked about across the nation, but like we've jumped right in and are working with the School of Social Work to help develop that. And, you know, what we want to see long term is the School of Social Work developing a certificate program or something along those lines to emphasize the importance of the co-response model. Like for our officers, what they learn is just the empathy side of dealing with people. Like to me is the big piece. We bring the social workers in and they can do case management and the follow up. Our officers are good at engaging, but long term solutions, we're just not equipped to deal with that or to do it. So when our officers engage with some of our vulnerable community with the social work interns with them, they can help people in the moment to get them to whatever resources they need. And helping them in the moment's the key to this. Like you can say, oh, I'm coming back tomorrow. Tomorrow you may never engage with them again. So if they're willing to participate and want help and we can do it now, that's how we can impact change.
How's the assistance come about, I guess, for some of these folks? Are they walking the streets and it's an observation, or are you getting calls for service and you're making the determination then maybe it's a social worker that needs to come to this as well?
So it's a little bit of both. Our calls for service aren't as high as a municipal police department, but if we get a call for a distressed individual, our police officers engage with that person and make sure it's safe. The social work piece fits. There's more to it than just showing up and saying, hey, we're here to help. So they have to assess the situation, the scene, and really determine if that person is in the right place to want help.
Mm-hmm. What's great about this program is that it's expanding upon a lot of the work that we're already doing at the UMBPD. So our community outreach and support team, which is called COAST for short, works with homeless populations and vulnerable populations. We partner with the Baltimore Police Department for the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program LEAD, which helps to provide resources to people who might be going through a mental health crisis or, you know, we're trying to keep them out of prison and keep from arresting them. Instead, we're providing resources. So the social work program is really building upon that work that we're already doing and just, you know, adding that extra case management piece.
Is this something that municipal police are doing as well, or are you able to do that because you might not have as heavy a load as the city police?
So the municipal departments across the state, there may be one or two others in the state of Maryland that are currently doing something, a similar model. This Baltimore Police Department is trying to get something like this off the ground. If we can work out the kinks and develop the model, it would be easier for us to hand off to some of the municipal departments.
We're really fortunate to have the support from our leadership that allows us to follow in these programs and really build and develop these programs. So we're really fortunate that we're able to do that.
And the best thing, it's UMB, right? We're all here together. It's UMB strong, UMB proud, however you want to say it. So our goal is that we have social work involved. Next, it will be nursing and law and pharmacy, and just get everyone on the team to, it would be a much more holistic approach. Mm-hmm. So we engage with people. We have all of these experts here that can help. So why not leverage them? I mean, we work with some different grassroots organizations in the city, and we're working on a pipeline from youth growing up in Baltimore City to police officer. So the one organization that we're working with, Art Smiles, they're youth mentors. So they have they're touching the lives of the young people in Baltimore City from a young age into their early 20s. So if they can help leverage them into a security officer's position, for example, we get them here at UMB, it opens up a world of opportunity for them with a tuition remission. And also if they want to get into law enforcement or any of the other fields here at the university, quite honestly.
Oh my gosh, it's like full circle for you. Cause you know, 12-year-old superhero coming into the neighborhood and then you bring them into it.
that it's the way of the future. I mean, we have to engage with our community. If we don't, we're missing the big picture. We are a wonderful organization in a wonderful city. We just need to look for the positives and grow on.
You know, speaking of community partnerships, we're also partnering with our sister institutions. So earlier it was announced that we're partnering with the University of Baltimore for policing services. How does that partnership work? And will the UMB community notice anything different as part of the arrangement?
No. So our UMB community and UBALT will not notice anything different in the day-to-day activities of both organizations. The biggest difference for our partners at UBALT is the command structure in their organization. We're going to replace the administrative section of UBALT with what we're currently doing here at UMB. So it will be one leadership over the two campuses.
Great.
And I know it might be hard to set and achieve priorities and goals during a pandemic, but what are a couple of the goals that you have or things you're focusing on as we look toward the next year or so?
We want to grow and develop our partnership with the School of Social Work, and just make that a much more robust venture with them. And the community outreach and support team is great, but we just need to bring in all of the different things we're doing together a little more and just be a little more structured there. I think another big push for me would be developing within the organization for our security officers a career path. Just the growth and development and help them reach whatever goals that they have. And then look, my biggest priority is the safety and security of the campus. I mean, that's the number one thing that we're here to do. We constantly evaluate our patrol strategy, our training, our response to different situations. We want to be the best.
Well, and you said it, we are an urban setting and we're pretty safe, but things can happen. So let's talk about some ways that we can stay safe here at UMB.
Whenever I address the student groups, I always give them the same advice I give my daughter whenever I bring her down to campus. We want you to travel in groups if you can. Well-lit streets, stay on the main paths, walk with a purpose. When you're getting in and out of your car, do that with a purpose as well. When you get out, make sure you lock your car. Your valuables are all secured. The walking and talking on the cell phones is just distracts you as you're traveling around campus. You should be with your head up and aware of your surroundings while you're traveling from your parking garage to your school or your school to your home, whatever, however that journey looks, you need to be aware of your surroundings at all times.
And let's say I'm walking out of my building and I'm not, you know, I just don't feel safe for whatever reason. Maybe I'm here a little bit later in the day. What options do I have to get to my car in a feeling safer?
If you're not feeling safe on campus, get into one of our buildings if you can. And depending on the situation, Safe Ride and Safe Walk are available. Safe Ride is available from 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. Safe Walk is available 24/7. A Safe Ride is much like a Lyft or an Uber app. You can request a ride through our UMB app. You can see how long it's going to take them to pick you up. You can see where the van is. It'll notify you when the van shows up. Average wait time is about 8 minutes. Duration of the ride is around 4 minutes. We give about 110 rides per day with a Safe Ride. Safe Walk is a much... it's really underutilized. We only give maybe 2 or 3 safe walks or escorts a month. And that service isn't, you have to call in and you have to talk to one of our dispatchers. They'll dispatch a security officer or a police officer to walk you, meet you where you're at and walk you to your car or to your whatever location.
I actually didn't even know about Safe Walk until you just are talking about it right now. So that's really great to know.
And our Safe Ride service is available through the mobile UMB app. So you don't need to download a new app. It's just right there on your phone already, hopefully. And there's also, you know, if you don't have the app, but you're getting ready to leave and it's dark out, you'd like to get a ride. Every UMB building has a cling on the external facing doors. And you can scan the QR code right then and you can download the app and request a ride.
That's great because it's one less phone number to remember.
Absolutely. But if you don't have a smartphone, you can call our police communications center, and that's 410-706-6882.
I have to say, I have used the Safe Ride service before, and I didn't think about the Safe Walk because, as silly as it was, I was in Saratoga, I was in Lexington, but parked in Saratoga, and I wound up working until like 10 o'clock one night. The lights were off in the building, and I thought, it is such a short walk. I am not a person who's afraid, but like my mother brain kicked in and I thought, who knows, there could be anybody behind this building. We see all kinds of things there in the morning when we walk in. And I called for a Safe Ride, which in hindsight was silly. I should have called for a Safe Walk. But the gentleman was so nice. He pulled up, he was in the van, he drove me all of 100 yards to the garage. But I felt just so comforted that he was there to do that for me. So it is a terrific service. And I would encourage anyone to use either of those services because they're here for us. And, you know, why should we not feel confident just simply walking to our car if we're doing service for the university late at night?
And all of our drivers and our safe walkers are UMB PD employees. They're police and they're security officers. It's not a stranger. Like if you requested a Lyft or an Uber, you will know exactly who you're getting in the car with. They're employed by the university.
And most have been here a long time, 15, 20 year employees. So it should be reassuring when you get in the van to see that friendly face.
Yeah. And I'm sure many people would recognize the people who are coming to pick them up and stuff, because we see our UMB police officers and security officers around all the time when we go into buildings. Since we're talking about all this, you know, the weather's getting colder. It's getting dark earlier. We're talking about ways to stay safe. I noticed we have those blue light stops on the corners and everything. Most college campuses have it. Can you tell us a little bit about those blue lights, who you're talking to, what happens when you press one of those?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked, because I think a lot of people see the blue light phones on campus and aren't sure what to do. So a blue light phone, sometimes they're located on the side of a building. Sometimes it's a standalone structure. We have 31 of them across campus, plus there's a number of them in parking garages across campus. And the blue light phones are not panic buttons. It is a phone. So when you push the button, you can't just run away. You need to stay and talk to our police communications operator. It's the dispatcher that you would talk to if you called our police department. And what they're going to do is they're going to ask you the location of your emergency. And there is a really convenient number. It's big number on the blue light phone. You can't miss it. You're just going to tell them the number. You're going to say, I'm at blue light phone 10. And if that's all you want to say, they'll send help there. If you want to stay and you want to talk to them and let them know what's happening, or, you know, if there's a medical emergency so they know what resources to send, any additional information is great. But at the very least, once you hit the button, you need to tell them the number on the phone. And then help will be on the way.
So don't hit and run.
Do not hit the button and run.
Hit and talk.
I think that's good advice in all facets of life.
Yes, you heard it here.
And we should not forget our comfort dog, Officer Lexi. So how can people meet Officer Lexi, and how does she help folks with anxiety?
Yeah, Officer Lexi is our comfort canine. She was the third University Police Department comfort canine in the United States. So we're really proud of Lexi. And she helps people with stress, anxiety, depression, trauma that they might be dealing with, not just members of our community, but some of our neighbors in West Baltimore. She comes to Powell sometimes. And even our own police officers, if they're having a really stressful day or they had, you know, a call that was really tough, she will go and just work with our police officers, and they can take a couple minutes to pet her and just kind of feel some relief. Lexi's also really helpful because she helps us build relationships in neighborhoods that might not trust the police, or they might not feel comfortable approaching the police, but everybody loves a dog. So Lexi's a really great asset there as well. But you can request a visit with Lexi on the police website, which is umaryland.edu/police. There's also a direct link is bit.ly/officerlexi. And she has an Instagram, which is at Officer Lexi. So you can follow her there. And there's lots of cute pictures. So
I am a follower.
She has more followers than I have.
So how old is Lexi and what breed is she?
Lexi is turning, I think Lexi just turned 3.
Oh, wow.
In August. And she is a mix of a lot of different things. We say she's an Australian Shepherd mix. We actually got some DNA results for her at some point.
Oh, really?
And if you ever see Officer Lexi's canine handler, Corporal J.R. Jones, he has little trading cards with Lexi's information and some like favorite, what her favorite things are.
Love that.
Yeah. So if you ever spot JR and Lexi around, he'll give you a card.
Is it okay to approach her with treats or no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just, JR always says people come up and say hi to Lexi before they say hi to him. So remember that there's also a human there. Say hi to JR.
So we need to bring treats for him is what exactly. You're saying. Right, right.
So Lexi's story is pretty cool though. She comes from Brevard County, Florida. But so anyhow, the Paws and Stripes Academy in Brevard County, Florida is where we got Lexi from. She's trained by the inmates in Brevard County. And then they host police departments to come down every few months to work with the inmates and the canines that are in training. And then they really helps transition them back to a friendly home.
Well, we plugged Lexi's social media. We should probably tell folks how they can follow you, the police department, on social media, too. So,
yeah, if while you're following Lexi, please be sure to also follow the police department. We are on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at @PoliceUMB. And there's a lot of really important resources and safety tips. We have fun pictures and updates of stuff that we're doing. As well as, you know, if there's police activity in the area or something, you know, a traffic issue, we might post that on our social media if it doesn't really rise to the level of sending an alert out to campus. But it's really important to follow us on social media so that you can get all that information, as well as our partners in emergency management. You can follow them on Twitter at @UMBOEM.
Not only will you see alerts and such on social, but soon people will probably be seeing fun pictures from the annual polar bear plunge, right? You guys are participating this year?
Yes, this is my first year as a super plunger. 24 plunges in 24 hours.
Oh my God.
Wow.
My goal was to raise $10,000 for Special Olympics of Maryland.
Your goal still is to raise $10,000.
Yes, yes. I have a lot of work to do. Kelly will kill me if I have to write a check for $9,000 on my own.
Kelly, his wife. Yeah.
You can delete or maneuver that any way you want.
Redacted.
So Chief Leone and Lieutenant Matthew Johnson will both be super plunging this year.
Wow.
Both of them need to raise $10,000. So we definitely could use your support. And a lot of our officers and police communications operators, security officers, I always plunge every year. I'm not as crazy as Chief Leone. I'm just going to do it the one time. But we all, you know, are really invested in this endeavor and definitely appreciate your support.
How do we support you? Where do we look to find?
Yeah, you can donate to Chief Leone. There's a link in our social media, which is at @PoliceUMB.
And when and where are the plunges?
The plunge is in January, and it's at Sandy Point State Park, which is in Anne Arundel County.
Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, when I dove in, it was like ice cubes hitting your.
I remember that.
Right. So
it's a really fun event, though. There's videos of like ones from years past on umaryland.edu and go watch it and then donate right after because it's a real fun thing.
So it's great. It's a great experience.
Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you, Chief and Karin, for being here. I think what's really great is that we've given people the opportunity to understand what you're doing in the community, not just on the UMB campus, and that your reach is far greater than just our little central hub. I also think it's really interesting for people to know that you are real policemen and women. You know, we oftentimes look at campuses and just think that these are security guards, but you guys are very vested in our safety, and we appreciate that.
You know, many times university police departments are thought of as security forces or just public safety in general. You know, we are a full service law enforcement agency certified by the Police Training Commission here in Maryland. We have concurrent jurisdiction with the Baltimore Police Department. And, you know, we're not just the average police department. Our community outreach and everything just puts us, in my opinion, a step above the rest.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. Thank you both. And we will look for you patrolling the streets.
Thank you.
Our next episode on Thursday, December 2nd, will feature Tony Scott from the Southwest Partnership and Ashley Vallis, who is the Executive Director of Community Engagement and Strategic Initiatives at UMB. We'll learn about what Southwest Partnership does, how you can help community organizations, and how UMB is involved with the Southwest Partnership.
Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving.
Bye. See you next time. Gobble, gobble.
The UMB Pulse with Charles Chalee, Dana Rampola, and Jenna Frick is a UMB Office of Communications and Public Affairs production. Edited by Charles Chalee, sound engineering by Jenna Frick, marketing by Dana Rampola. Music by No Vibe, recorded in the University of Maryland Baltimore Community Engagement Center.